please reserve 2 minutes for rebuttal.
We're going to talk. You can hear from those guys when we talk to them.
Good morning, Your Honors. And it's been a pleasure to be here in this fine courtroom. This case, the issue before the court, is what really is the proper remedy for Ms. Moore, who is a state prisoner under state charges, but in custody of the federal government. What avenue or what procedure could be followed to challenge the classification of his status from a high security to what he claims is medium?
Is it clear who made the classification?
I believe it is in the record. There isn't anything in there.
But the lawyer said believes it means the ability of multiple ways you had at least the record establish who did the classification. That's a yes or no answer. We can pursue the answer.
I guess I can't say that I don't know for sure, but
if you don't know for sure whether the record tells us who made the classification,
the record is not tell us.
Okay. Given that fact, since we don't know what the classification is, don't we have to establish that before we can resolve any of the rest of it?
I think that that would be an issue that would be appropriate for remand. I believe that the government will
also see why is it. Why is that a remand issue? Why is that a question that you failed to establish in the court below and you failed to establish this specification made by the federal authorities? You are not the one who you find to come up.
Well, Your Honor, I came into this case as pro bono.
I am meeting personally. I'm sorry, I'm not here to plead counsel. I'm trying to talk about the state of the record that we gave that this was not established.
If this is not a classification,
let's just assume that this is not a classification made by the federal government authorities. What business do we have having litigation with the federal authorities about something that almost they have no control?
And that's a fair point, Your Honor. I believe that once the government gets into it, it will be established, or at least agreed that it was the Bureau of Prisons that made this classification pursuant to a contract by statute. The prisoner was in custody of the federal government through the Bureau of Prisons. In speaking with the opposing counsel, they provided documents to lay out the procedure in which the Bureau of Prisons made this determination and the factors and such. It is not in the record. I agree. The record is very scant. It was dismissed sua sponte without any briefing. And really, all there is a habeas petition by my client and then the order for dismissal. And so there are problems, and I believe that a remand would be appropriate. There are many questions, I think, that will, sanctionable questions, that will relate on the bearing of this case as to whether the Bureau of Prisons followed its own procedures, as well as whether any of the facts could necessarily lead to an earlier release from confinement. But on the scant record that we have right now, there really is just not enough information.
Is there any reason to think that the level of security of the prison relates to the length of the sentence or confinement?
I think there could be, and I can't say because we just don't have enough information really to for me to say with any degree of confidence whether there would or would not be.
And if the issue is whether the Bureau of Prisons followed its own procedures, would that be properly an APA claim of some sort rather than an habeas claim?
Well, and that was addressed in the order in the briefing, and I've spent some time researching that issue since we've gotten the order. And what I can discern is that there necessarily isn't a straight claim under the Administrative Procedure Act that it would follow under Section 2241, which is the habeas statute, which tells me if somebody is held in violation of the Constitution or the laws of the United States or a treaty that Section 2241 would provide the mechanism to challenge this. And we have several cases from this circuit where the courts have done exactly that. The petition was brought as a Section 2241 habeas petition, but it was analyzed under the framework of the Administrative Procedure Act. And I believe that would be the correct vehicle there, and that the court...
I'm sorry, so you're saying the case is brought under Section 2241 but litigated as an APA case?
That is the standard or the framework under which it's analyzed as to whether that person is confined in violation of the laws of the United States.
So you have a case that does that? What is some examples of what you're referring to there?
Yes, Your Honor. There is a case from this circuit, Crickin v. Thomas. The citation is 579F3D978, and that's a 2009 case. And that was a Section 2241 habeas petition, which was analyzed under the Administrative Procedure Act as to whether the Bureau of Prisons properly enacted the limitations that it did. In that case, it had to do with the Residence and Drug Abuse Treatment Program and whether there was a categorical exclusion of anyone who could get the extra year of early release if they had certain convictions. And so there were issues as to whether they properly followed the procedure.
But it was clear there, it sounds like, that the length of the confinement was in play. We don't know that from this complaint, do we?
We don't know for certain. That's one of the problems.
So what do we do with Nettles, the recent en banc decision from this court?
Well, Nettles addressed in the state prisoner context, and that is really the core issue, I think, here today, is that state prisoners have other available remedies that aren't present in this case. And my client, Mr. Moore, is not allowed to proceed under the habeas. He has no remedy at all.
Why do you say that? Why doesn't he have an APA remedy? If he's suing the Bureau of Prisons, which is a federal agency, why doesn't he have an Administrative Procedures Act?
Well, I think he does, but it has to be brought through the avenue of the habeas petition, at least as best that I can discern from the cases that have analyzed it. He has no Bivens claim because he's not seeking money damages. He's only seeking injunctive relief. And this court has stated in Sunita versus McAfee, and that's a 2006 opinion, 820F3D390, that Bivens are not available for claims.
That's right. The APA usually provides for injunctive relief against federal agencies if that's appropriate. So I'm not sure what would be different about him compared to other people who could bring an APA claim. Maybe there is something I'm just not aware of what it would be.
The best that I can discern, Your Honor, is maybe there is a direct claim under the APA. I'm not entirely sure. The cases that I've seen, they've analyzed it under the habeas context.
You have about 2 minutes and a half.
Yes, we have to use it for 3 seconds.
May it please the court, my name is Kate Lawson and I represent the United States responding in this matter. This court should extend the holding of Nettles, as suggested by Judge Friedland, to all prisoners, regardless of whether they're in judgment based on a state court judgment or a federal court judgment, or whether they are in federal or state custody, to hold that a petitioner may only challenge the fact or duration of his sentence in habeas and all other actions related to the conditions of his confinement through a civil rights action, if at all. So if he is in federal prison due to and he's challenging a decision that was made by the Bureau of Prisons about, and he wants to challenge that decision and what level of confinement he's in, what kind of action does he have?
With this, he would have to challenge this action outside of habeas because the conditions of his confinement, based on the language and standard that the Nettles Court relied upon, applies equally to federal or state prisoners.
Well, in state prison, they have
actions that can be brought. So is there an action that can be brought if you're challenging a decision of the Federal Bureau of Prisons? As in the Salina case that counsel referenced, it explicitly says that there doesn't need to be an injunctive remedy under the APA, or an injunctive remedy under Bivens, because the APA provides a waiver of sovereign immunity under Section 702 for injunctive actions against agencies of the United States. So is there any reason that we shouldn't construe this action as an APA action for injunctive relief? Yes, Your Honor. As the Nettles Court suggests in its decision, it said, well, we could construe this as a claim under 1983, but we're going to decline to do so without the petitioner's consent, because there's two sets of framework, habeas cases and claims as to prison conditions. Claims as to prison conditions, whether under the APA or Bivens, FTCA 1983, have to be complied with the mandates of the PLRA, which has different filing fee restrictions, different exhaustion requirements, three strikes rules, and the petitioner, without that opportunity, may not want to bring that sort of thing.
So is the appropriate action for us to take this point to remand for the district court to ask the petitioner whether he would like to have an APA claim or whether he's worried about the PLRA consequences?
I submit that by upholding the dismissal on the district court's action, should the petitioner want to file another lawsuit, he could. However, under the APA, if there's no jurisdiction to review his individualized determination as to his classification status, so the issue is really moved to
explain what's wrong under the APA with bringing a challenge.
So, in Reed versus Thomas, this court held that a petitioner may not challenge an individualized determination by the BOP as to classification status. There's explicitly in 18 U.S.C. 3625 a statement that there's no challenge under the APA to these subsections, which includes 3621, which has the criteria that the BOP evaluates in making prisoner classification status.
So if that's true, we don't have an analogous situation to state prisoners, because state prisoners, if they think their classification is in some way illegal or unconstitutional, could bring a 1983 action. And I thought the reason we were saying we didn't need habeas is because there was an alternative, but now you're saying there is not an alternative.
In either case, whether under 1983 or the APA, the court has jurisdiction to review that action. However, there's no relief that may be granted because of these cases as to individualized determination. And others throughout the Supreme Court and other circuits have said if a prisoner is challenging their classification status, even if you're looking at a person such as the ADX in Florence, Colorado, under 23-hour lockdown, they can't challenge between prisons because it's not the type of claim where you would have a due process right.
Well, that may go to the merits, but is that a jurisdictional issue? So I'm trying to figure out, it sounds like you're saying that there is no due process problem, but if you could think of some other way to frame it legally, would there be jurisdiction? Or are you saying there's not even jurisdiction to bring a claim in any federal context?
There is jurisdiction under the APA, provided that the petitioner submits to the PLRA's requirements, but he would not get relief on the merits.
Speaking of relief, Ms. Fawcett, I realize the original petition was filed pro se, but the relief sought wasn't transferred just to specific institutions, one in Virginia and one in Massachusetts. What would give any federal court the ability to do that? So how could his relief ever be granted, even if you could jump through all of the other procedural issues in the case?
Your Honor, my understanding of the petition is he's challenging his points, his classification status, and then argues that he wants to be transferred to specific federal medium security prisons. And I agree that I don't think there's any relief that a federal court could say directing the Bureau of Prisons to send someone to a particular prison. As under 3621 provides the number of factors that the Bureau of Prisons can consider in place getting involved in the day-to-day operation of the Bureau of Prisons, which involves a number of security issues and budget issues and everything else.
Well, maybe so, but we don't care to act them to be sent to a particular prison, but if it's not a litigation, he just points down within the account of the Bureau of Prisons moving into some medium security institution, right?
The habeas cases that have...
Yes, I know. So even if he got his points down, he would stay in a maximum security prison. The Bureau of Prisons would keep him there.
There's no challenge whether under habeas or due process to classification status available.
I understand that, but assuming there is. That being said, we can't enforce him to be sent to a particular federal prison, right? Okay? But we can give him, if he succeeds in his claims, he would give his points now, and he'd be classifiable as medium security, and with an account of the person not keeping him in a maximum security institution. This would have been set up as lots of reasons that didn't keep a medium security person in a maximum security prison.
The Bureau of Prisons has discretion to keep someone in a maximum security prison regardless of their point level, because there's a number of different factors involved, including the offense conduct. For example, this petitioner has a sexual offense from North Dakota, and the USP Tucson is the only maximum security prison with the sex offender management program. That's just one of the factors that the BOP takes into consideration in its placement of prisoners. So as a result, while there's no challenge to the classification status because it's not presenting in a typical restraint because of this Bureau of Prison Discretion, even if his points were changed, it wouldn't necessarily mean that he would be transferred, let alone
transferred. It could, right? As long as he is classified in maximum security, he's not going to be moved out. But he could be moved out if he gets his points down. But he would, of course, be in a better position to be moved out, right? I'm just trying to figure out whether he can get any meaningful relief.
Well, he could be transferred to a different prison. That's still part of the BOP's discretion, and one that he can challenge through his administrative remedy program, but not through a federal court action.
So what if he brings an administrative remedy challenge and the prison makes a totally arbitrary decision? They read someone else's file and they classify him based on his file, so that's something just blatantly arbitrary. You're saying there's no action he can bring at all?
Yes, Your Honor. In sum, while this action is not properly brought in habeas, it similarly should not be applied as an APA claim due to the requirements of the PLRA.
What do you make of Hernandez v. Campbell?
Hernandez v. Campbell, relating to the judge, the non-substitute judge providing a letter, there was no analysis in that case as to the scope of habeas relief.
It was a 2041 case, right?
Yes.
And we said you could get relief.
In that case, it was specific to the BOP misapplying.
Is that a yes or a no? You can explain if it was going to answer my question, and then we can move from there.
Yes, that claim was brought pursuant to 2241.
And we said he can get relief, right?
The court did not conduct an analysis of the scope of habeas relief.
I'm sorry, yes or no? We did say you could get relief, or could we say not get relief?
Yes, the court provided relief.
Okay, why are we bound by that? Ninth Circuit appeal that has been intervening in banks, as far as I know, that has overruled it. Why is the Hernandez the end of the case here?
As previously previously provided there was not an analysis.
It's just a word that they made it up and flipped a coin. It's published by a second opinion. Are you going to tell us, oh, we can second-guess the ruling of this court because we disagree with this analysis, or we thought this analysis was short? You don't need to say that, do you? That's what we just thought you better than that.
The analysis in that case was also as to whether the BOP had appropriately applied the statute in 3621, not as to its discretion within the factors of 3621.
Well, maybe not, but you could say that 2241 was the right avenue for relief. Right? So why doesn't that, just one way, doesn't that just answer the question here? If you want to move forward back, you can, after you lose. Why isn't the case as far as you're concerned?
That issue was also looking within the APA framework and with the language in Scott and Skinner, which Nettles relies upon, is stating these prescriptions as to where habeas petition.
So what? I mean, you're stating facts, but what is your argument? Are you saying that those are the rules or anything? That's what you're saying. Maybe you are. If so, you need to explain why.
Well, Hernandez was not directly asking the question of what avenue he needed to bring that claim in. Nettles said, stated to the Johnson opinion and to the Skinner opinion, prescribing that habeas relief is only available for challenging the factor duration of one's custody and not as to the conditions of confinement. To the extent that's inconsistent, as the three circuit thing did for Dawkin, I would say that Hernandez should be overruled.
What are your position to overrule anything? Either Nettles did overrule it, or you're the block. So are you making the argument that Nettles overruled Hernandez? I don't remember reading that they said they did. But maybe you can tell me something else.
As the Nettles court cited when it was distinguishing Crane, Close, and Hernandez, they said they did not address the scope of habeas and did not shed any opinion on conflict for them. So to the extent that it implies that there is relief under habeas for conditions of confinement claim, it has been overruled by Nettles.
But should Nettles and Nettles and Hernandez face to say it's overruled, and you want us to say it overruled the case of which it was aware and failed to actually say it's overruled? Which is what you asked to do. I'm just trying to understand.
Inasmuch as the court, the plurality opinion in Nettles, cited to those cases and said, disagreed with the dissent in finding that they were controlling because of this scope of relief challenge, which wasn't a part of the case or briefed at any point.
Let me ask you this. If we look at this and we decide that this did not overrule Hernandez, is Hernandez controlling it? Let's have a look at that. We read the tea leaves and we say, no, that just did not overrule Hernandez. Why isn't Hernandez controlling?
Your Honor, I would say that Hernandez is not controlling because the Nettles rule applies, but Hernandez is also as to a specific statutory application where it found that the
BOP's the question to be dealt with on remand. Hernandez lives. I'd say that's where we are. We're looking at Nettles says overruled Hernandez. Hernandez lives. District court dismissed it because it says there's no avenue. Hernandez says there is an avenue. Why isn't it kind of different for the state? And the district court can sort things. Your quibbles, you get a chance to talk about it to the district judge and figure out whether maybe district is actually following the release provided by Hernandez.
Hernandez is not applicable to classification decisions, which...
It said, whether location or conditions of a sentence's execution must be brought into reason 41, as a quote. Right? Whether petition was a challenge in whether location or condition of a sentence's execution must be brought pursuant to reason 41.
That is language that has been used that is inconsistent with the court's prior rulings in Crawford, as well as the court's later decisions in Nettles.
I understand that if the fact that it's a prior decision is either here or there, because it's a ruling of our court, there is a bond by it, even if you think it reasoned badly. Now, the argument that it's been ruled by a subsequent bank case is a plausible one, but I'm asking you to supposedly look at Nettles and say, Hernandez, it did not uphold Hernandez. So you just have to suspend disbelief and follow me down that path. So assuming that's, because I don't think it made a very good argument as to why Nettles overruled Hernandez, but maybe you're right. We'll go back and take a look. Let's sort of conclude that Hernandez survives Nettles. Okay? So assuming that to be the case, why isn't this court just wrong under Hernandez? And this is something we sent back for the district court to sort out on remand.
The Hernandez decision, nonetheless, is looking. The Hernandez decision was still analyzing this case.
You think it was a decision to argue? Well, I'm telling you, it's worth the argument.
The Hernandez decision was looking at part of the issue as to this same framework under the APA. So rather than parse putting APA claims within a habeas petition, extending the logic to make between two classifications, one under habeas, one everything else as to prison conditions under the PLRA, is consistent with the holding in Nettles that provides that all of these claims are not within the core of habeas.
If I'm understanding correctly, Hernandez itself was a fragile length of confinement issue with the length of the sentence, but I think Judge Kaczynski's been asking about language in that opinion that makes it sound like other kinds of challenges can also be brought under 2241.
The language in Hernandez as to that is...
And it's the same language that was repeated in other cases as well. This conditions of confinement that I'll go back to it, but it's language that, as you pointed out, has been repeated in more than one case, I believe. That right? This language that makes it sound like 2241 challenges didn't be brought in. So, challenge the manner, location, or conditions of a sentence's execution, that sounds pretty broad, and that language is in several of our cases.
The language has been in several of the cases. The cases that petitioner cites to are involving the savings clause under, as really to the interplay between 2241 and 2255. And it hasn't been essential to the holding of the case. And as the Supreme Court held in Skinner, there are not cases where
I think you're right. I have not found a case where it was applied to a condition in exactly the kind of way that he's trying to use it here. But now you're making an argument about whether we're bound by our own dicta, right? So, I mean, do you have an argument that this is not reasoned dicta or something like that that you can offer us that explains why we shouldn't follow this?
On the parapet, finding dicta is very much in some cases. There has to be an issue that was not considered. That's why I always think that the parapet is a very strict view of what is dicta. It's a very narrow view. And that's it, my opinion.
Yes, Your Honor. But as the issue as to mirror location or conditions was not briefed or part of those cases.
You know that it wasn't. I mean, I know it wasn't. So it's dicta in the sense that those involved the length issue or something, but do you know that it wasn't briefed whether the habeas was described?
In the Crichton and Close cases as to the RDAP program, the conditions of confinement are not explicitly at issue except as it relates to this potential sentence reduction. To say also that the conditions of sentence execution are in play is somewhat different than saying that there's a challenge to prison conditions, period, inasmuch as the execution of a sentence relates more broadly to the factor of duration than it does necessarily to, for example, an Eighth Amendment claim, which you could say arguably falls within that, but has been repeatedly held to be improper in a civil rights action. Thank you, Your Honor.
I believe in the question has demonstrated some points here that this court has applied Section 2241 to other cases before where prisoners have been challenging things that necessarily relate to the conditions of their confinement. And we have the Harrison versus Olson case, we have the Hernandez case, we have several other cases that's cited in the decisions.
Can you point to anywhere it's clear that the length of the confinement was not an issue?
No, I cannot. The cases that have addressed it appear to be where there was some relation to length of confinement. Again, I think that with the little factual record that we have, I just can't say one way or the other whether there is any possibility to reduce the length of his confinement or not. We just don't have any evidence before us. And I don't think that the Nettles case could have overruled Hernandez as it related to an entirely different issue. And I think it even expressly said we are not touching on the issue of the federal prisoner context. The KNC and the reasoning there is that there is Section 1983, which was an alternative remedy, and that was really the whole point in every case in there, even the Supreme Court cases are all in the state prisoner context, which it's not here, and I see that I'm out of time.
But I have a question for you, and I realize you're asking us to reverse the dismissal of the habeas petition to remand for further proceedings with the district court. What is the relief that your client could obtain if we did that?
It could be a reduction in his security classification. I think that is ultimately what he is asking for, is that he believes that under the procedures that haven't been followed correctly with the Bureau of Prisons, and that he is misclassified. And so that ultimately would be, I think, the inquiry and the relief is whether the Bureau of Prisons should go back and revisit his security classification analysis. And if they do that and they find in his favor, then we just don't know, but there could be a possibility, which I think is ultimately an issue as to whether that that would ultimately lead to him being released from prison early.
And is that the sufficient concrete benefits that it would, once the case is out of prison? I mean, if it be of prison, I can leave him there where he is, and there's nothing we can do to force the executive to give any benefits to the mind of the law classification. Why isn't this just a theoretical benefit, and therefore not justiciable?
I think that other cases have addressed that point. I believe, and I hope I'm not wrong here, but Drinken v. Thomas and Klaus v. Thomas. Well, actually, excuse me, it was in the defendant that raised this point, was even though it wouldn't necessarily lead to their release, it could possibly lead to their early release. And even though the Bureau of Prisons still has discretion to deny it, doesn't mean that they will deny it, and therefore that there is a case of controversy there that ultimately could.
Excuse me, if you were saying about the sentence, it sounds like that's a losing argument to my position. The sentence raises it, but it doesn't buy it. It sounds like this is the first authority to.
No, that's it.
I'm not sure if this is where this was raised.
Probably at 946, is that what you're looking at?
I was just, when you said that, I was looking at 943.
Well, you may be right.
So I see at least on 943, the dissent is talking about a Muhammad versus Close case, where they talk about even the possibility of speedier release if Muhammad had prevailed. And I think that it was in that context where they're talking about that it doesn't have to lead to that, but if it could, that's enough.
So I think the dissent talks about that 946 also, but does the dissent actually talk about this standing question that Judge Kuczynski is asking about if the release might not give a remedy to the alleged injury, then maybe there's no standing at all?
The best I can say is in the context that the dissent was trying to distinguish between cases where just because it doesn't necessarily or will decide lead to that, that they still have discretion if there's a chance that's enough.
But the fact that the dissent makes an argument just means that majority doesn't buy it, so everything that the dissent says is turned on its head. Because the majority sees this argument, that's the buy into it. So if we read anything into the dissent, everything that the dissent says is wrong. The more persuasive you are telling us that the dissent says this, the more I have to assume that, well, the majority is on the opposite.
Well, that's an excellent point, Your Honor.
That's what happens when you sign dissents, you know.
Fair enough. No, I think it could be. Because of the context between the two cases, in Nettles, it was kind of different circumstances because we had a state prisoner. We have authority that says that, you know, the real question was whether Section 1983 is the exclusive remedy.
Let's assume it doesn't equal anything on this point at all. I mean, just argue to me, and then I just can't understand why. I mean, there's lots of stuff that happens. That the executive branch does, and the executive branch does a city of things nowadays, right? And there are lots of things that many people out there would prefer the government to do something. But we don't allow them standing to come from court and force the government to do certain things unless they get a concrete benefit out of a succession claim. I'm talking about environmental cases. There's all sorts of things out there that people say to show for them. You say, no, you can't
counsel does attempt to articulate it in straight terms is that there is a procedure that would not be administrative procedure act to review decisions of government agencies, which would be here. And the question really is,
so let me read you something. I think we can pause these challenges in the environmental area. Could this be your area? But just take my word for it. And there'll be groups who say that the Forest Service has reclassified this animal as being not an endangered species, for example. They can't just come in and claim that they have to say, well, you know, we walk the forest, we go there, camping, so they have to allege that their physical personal experience can be changed if this classification is changed. They can't just say, I'm somebody sitting in San Francisco and it bothers me in the head that, you know, this species has been taken off the endangered species. That's what I'm curious to say. I'm just wondering how the idea is that we can't just tell the executive branch to do things differently. We have to do it on behalf of somebody who will get complete benefits from doing that. And I'm just not sure how your client meets that standard. Maybe that's not fair to be asking you this at this point because you haven't briefed it and you look so nonplussed by the question. I don't mind you, but it's a special question. If it's, I guess, the subject matter jurisdiction, and particularly how about the request for act, it's something we have to ask at every stage.
Sure.
I guess maybe this is something that ought to be further briefed. I don't know. I don't mean to catch you unprepared.
And I will try the best. The only thing that I can think of is that, different from the environmental context, we have a person who has due process rights, individual rights, and that due process includes that government agencies do not act arbitrarily and capriciously in their decisions, and that is the best way, I think, standing here, doing the best I can, to distinguish that from other contexts where you're really arguing for something else that doesn't affect you personally per se. And according to the cases,
would anything about his day-to-day life change if he has a different number of points but is kept in the same prison anyway?
I can't say. I just don't know how it changes, Your Honor. The record doesn't have much there, and that's why I feel that